hoping to try to get Brooke Spector online. And this is on the fact that yesterday, which was Monday, saw the beginning of a very interesting trial out there in the U.S. And that is former President Donald Trump being put on trial for paying hush money. Now, it's no secret that President Donald Trump has had a skeleton or a closet full of skeletons that ever so once in a while seems to be tumbling out. His support base really doesn't care. But Monday, April 15th, marking the commencement of a landmark event in American political history, as former U.S. President Donald Trump, and of course, when we say former, he's still a candidate, right? You might see President Trump once again re-elected, at the end of the year. I wonder how many Americans will feel about that anyway. He faces trial in Manhattan, New York. Now, he's accused of paying hush money to Stormy Daniels. The name says it all, part of Mr. Trump's history of shenanigans. Mr. Trump faces 34 counts of falsifying business records with potential implications for his presidential aspirations and legal future, at least in the short term. Joining us this evening is Brooke Spector, no stranger to Radio Islam International. Good afternoon, good evening to you, Brooke Spector.
Good evening. Let me start by just clarifying the way this whole thing is being described, not just by you, but by multitudes of journalists and presenters. He's not on trial for hush money. Hush money is not a crime. It simply means I'm giving you money so that you won't talk about some thing that I find unsavory or unpleasant or embarrassing. That the trial is about having given the money to his then attorney, Michael Cohen, to pay Stormy Daniels. He then hid in the interstices of financial reporting that payment as if it were a legitimate business expense or campaign contribution. And so it's the falsification of business records and financial reporting that is the problem. And the reason why the payment was allegedly made was because it was deemed by, various people that it would be really embarrassing in the closing weeks of the then campaign, some years back, obviously, if word got out that he was handing out cash to women with whom he'd had relations beyond his spouse. So that's that sounds a little more complicated, and that's why everybody shrinks it down to the hush money trial.
Brooke, thanks. Thank you for that clarification. Of course, this trial in its own right being, in many ways, unprecedented. There have been U.S. presidents accused of financial wrongdoings before, but is this something new for American politics that you had a former president, standing trial? And what would be the future of Mr. Trump's his journey from now on?
Well, it is obviously precedent-setting. No president has ever been brought into a criminal proceeding after being president. That's beyond new. That's a whole other alternate universe of things. Obviously, presidents have been impeached, and there have been trials in the Senate as a function of those impeachments. Now, no president has ever been convicted by the Senate. And in any case, the penalty for a successful conviction for impeachment is losing your day job, as opposed to being on trial for a variety of felony charges, as Donald Trump will be now. But this is so extraordinarily unprecedented that people are grasping for straws to figure out ways to explain it all. And the second half of your comment says, and how will people respond to all this? There have been polls that in recent days that have said Republicans who said they supported Donald Trump for president, some of them, not all obviously, but some of them feel rather more awkward about supporting him were he convicted of this crime. I beg your pardon. because, you know, that has an awful, squishy, squeamish, steamy feeling to it. But then there are still a lot of Republicans who say it's all concocted, it's all made up, it's all deliberately just politics, very much echoing what Donald Trump calls all this, all of the different indictments that have been handed down against him, because this is just the first of several others, which relate more specifically to attempting to override the results of the 2020 election, or keeping a whole bathroom filled with classified documents that he took away from the White House when he left in 2021, or trying to encourage people to seize the Capitol building to forestall the idea that he would have lost the election. So this is just the first of several. The others are less likely to come into a trial before the election. But even so, there are Republicans who feel a little bit unnerved about the idea that they would go into a voting booth in November and vote for him once he had been convicted in this trial, if he were convicted.
Brooks, where does that leave, of course, the party, the Republican Party? Clearly, Mr. Trump is the forerunner, or, you know, he's the horse in front for their party. Whether they like it or not, you know, there is no chance, I want to assume, of Nikki Haley or anybody else making any form of resurgence, you know, anytime soon. So you could possibly have a party like the Republicans forcing themselves by way of their own personal laws and constitution to back a candidate that is very likely to be sitting for some sort of trial, even if he had to win the presidency at the end of the year.
Yeah. Again, the alternate universe prevails. Just for the benefit of your listeners, the only qualifications to become president are you have to be 35 years of age at the time of your election. At the time of your swearing in, you have to have lived consecutively, I think it's 15 years in the United States, and you have to be a natural-born citizen. That is to say, you can't have migrated to the U.S. and become a citizen and then be eligible to run. And that goes back to the beginnings of the Constitution and the country, where people were concerned about people with foreign loyalties somehow usurping the federal office. But let's add one more wrinkle to this. In the U.S., the election is not going to be just about the president. Remember, there are going to be 435 members of the House of Representatives, and something like 35 or 36, I can't recall off the top of my head, people running for the Senate. And in both cases, control of either of those houses will be up for grabs. If the man leading the party is a convicted criminal by virtue of the ending of this trial, it's going to have some unpredictable but likely difficult impacts on any number of the people running for Congress or even the Senate in districts that are very closely divided, because there's a usual tendency, not a law certainly, but there's a tendency of people to go into the voting booth and vote straight party ticket: president, House of Representatives, senator if it's running in their state, maybe a governor, state legislatures, the mayor, perhaps pulling that lever if it's one of those machine ones, or pushing that button if it's a computer screen, and voting for the full panoply of people running for office. If the candidate for president is a convicted felon, it's going to, you know, that's an extraordinarily interesting roll of the dice, and it should make Republicans very nervous. There's yet another wrinkle, of course, is that much of the fundraising that is going on among Republicans, a good chunk of it is actually being diverted, not illegally, but diverted to paying for Donald Trump's legal costs. And, you know, legal costs are expensive. We have experience here in South Africa with ex-presidents and former presidents who run up enormous legal bills, just by the way. and somehow they had to be paid. The lawyers do like to get their fee. And so the remainder of that money is being left over for supporting the campaigns of the other members of the House of Representatives, the Senate, and so forth and so forth. So that's yet another awkwardness that's coming out of all of this. And the final point I would make for you simply is that none of the polls show Donald Trump winning the election by gaining even a plurality of Democrats or independents, people who haven't registered for either of the two main parties. And, you know, you don't win an election with 40-some percent of the vote. You win an election with 50% or more. And so it's still something of a hill to climb. The other side of the coin, of course, is that Donald Trump is going to have a press conference or a media event every day in the afternoon once the trial day concludes, as he is apparently doing right now as we're talking.
Brooks, you know, a lot depends on the popularity of, current President Biden, that he has been seen, of course, as a leader. But in the last 3 to 4 months, especially with his approach towards Gaza, other events as well, ongoing events coming out of Ukraine and Russia, in many ways, President Biden has been seen, for the lack of a better description, as over the hill. He's always been, regarded as a senior member of the party. There were questions about his physical and mental health before he assumed office. But as the years roll on, I mean, how do you see his popularity? If he proves to be, in the next few months, a highly unpopular individual, then certainly Mr. Trump has got a chance with many Democrats choosing the fact that, you know what, we can't back a candidate who, doesn't seem to serve our interests. I mean, do you see it going in that way?
Well, first of all, I mean, the only poll that counts is the one that starts after all the ballots have been cast. Everything else is not conjecture, but everything else is a snapshot of ideas and feelings up until that point. In the most recent polling, the two candidates were basically neck and neck at the national level. The difference between them was statistically insignificant, with margins of error of 3% of the result at a 95% degree of confidence on the results. The two numbers are almost identical, which means in that sense it's kind of a toss-up. But you know and I know that the election in the U.S. isn't won on a broad national poll, just everybody being counted together. It's won state by state by state. And in five or six states, sometimes referred to as the swing states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, Nevada, maybe North Carolina, maybe Virginia. That's where the real difference in the real campaigning matters an enormous amount. Because in Donald Trump's one victory in 2016, the difference between him winning and Hillary Clinton winning was a combined 78,130-some votes in three states. That's smaller than the number of people fitting into a large football stadium, right? Turnout matters, really matters. If you can't convince your supporters to show up, that anything you do is not going to help you win if the people don't show up and actually vote. But because so much voting now takes place in advance of election day, and at least one state, everybody votes by mail in advance voting, some of the old home truths, verities that we had have gone out the window, so it's harder to predict. I will question one thing about Joe Biden's popularity versus his unpopularity. You know, we used to say that kitchen tables matter. Kitchen table issues matter the most. The old banner that was hung in a Bill Clinton campaign office It's the economy, comma, stupid. Means that people vote on the basis of what they think is best for their own lives, families, personal income, personal success, personal future, rather than usually foreign policy issues, because they're usually seen as far away, distant, and not necessarily relevant to the likes of you and me. And that's how most people think of it. The problem with the Israel-Gaza situation is that a chunk of, and how much no one is quite sure, a chunk of people who traditionally would have supported a Democratic candidate without thinking about it have decided that they may well not do so because of that issue. And the number of those people, the percentage of Democratic supporters, is really up in the air. I haven't seen any really good polling on that very question that speaks to that issue. I've seen pictures of demonstrations, but you know, there's no way to tell whether in those demonstrations those are Democratic voters or foreign students or anything else. So I'm not absolutely convinced I know the answer to that part of the problem. The one thing I think you can say almost for certain is that people who go into the voting booth in November are going to be picking between two people, neither of whom they really, really want to see become president. And that should be a serious concern to the Biden forces, yes.
Brooke Spector, thank you for your time this evening here and with contributing to this discussion and, of course, various clarities. And once again, always appreciated, Brooks, and have a good evening ahead of you.
You take care anytime.